Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of the Debaterios podcast. I am one of your awesome hosts, SJW Debates. I'm here with my equally awesome, probably more awesome co-host, Oreo. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Well, fantastic. All right. I'm so glad that we finally got this in. We're doing it now. Really excited. I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've been talking about doing this for like, what, about a few months?
A few months. So it was your idea to begin with. So what made you want to start a podcast?
I honestly don't know. Because I was watching Destiny do a podcast with one of his friends. And I guess that was like the inspiration. Like, I was like, hey, I want to like get one of my friends who's like, I guess, equally awesome and like, I guess
he said it
equally political, like Trihex is. So I was like, hey, because I just didn't know who to do it with at first. Because when we did that stream where we were debating that one dude,
I miss him.
Interesting story about that, by the way. But it's long story short, the guy was like a white nationalist, and SJW Debates here ended up helping me out during the debate. But we had like a conversation afterwards, and I was like, oh shit, hey, you know, I was like, you're actually good, like, because we had a very good conversation. And I was like, wow, just imagine if like I did a podcast where like me and you just like basically talked about stuff. And I was like, that wouldn't that be great? And then now we're doing it. So
it's real exciting to do it. So I'm real happy that you invited me on, because this is exciting. I love talking to people. I love getting really close into the mic and doing my NPR voice. I think it's just super cool. Also, I spent all this money on equipment, and my husband's going to yell at me if I don't make some sort of use of it. So that's what I'm doing right now. So tell me a little bit more about yourself. Just what are some of the basic facts that you would put on your character sheet if you were off into the world?
Okay. So I'm 19 years old. Shocker. I guess you could say I'm black.
I guess you could say
I'm bi. I'm trying to think of like other things to add, like different facts. What else?
You've run through the basics there. I think one of the things that impresses me most about you is that you are 19, but man, your online presence, you are wise beyond your years, and that's not just saying nice things. Like I think most people are really surprised to find that you're that young, because you have these really good, nuanced opinions. You assert them well, and something that it took me 10 years longer to learn than you, because I'm 29, much older. I'm an old man. Look at this gray hair. is that you'll admit when you don't know something, and instead of just going, screw it, that's my opinion anyway, you'll go out and look for more information. Like, you'll actually, you care about getting it right, in the sense that you'll look up sources, you'll dig deeper into things, and you won't just say, well, this is what I think is true, therefore it's true. So that's something that really impressed me about you, even before, like, it's because I followed you a long time before we knew each other, and that's something that really impressed me. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Look, I guess since you shared something you like about me, I guess I'll share something I like about you. I guess what I like about you is the fact that you're a really scientific person. So what I mean by that is, like, you'll always look at studies deeper than most people would. So, like, me, for example, like, when I see a study, I would just, like, read through it without, like, I guess, giving a care about it. Like, unless it actually interests me, but, like, if it's just, like, a regular old study, I'm not going to, like, take the time to, like, look through the context and stuff, you know. I might miss some things here and there and, you know, kind of be dumb if I did that. But with you, what you do is, like, you go beyond the context of the study. Like, you always try to, like, look for things that most people wouldn't even spot, like the language of the time in which the study was done. You know, some of the wording that the authors have used, or like look at the data and, you know, pinpoint what the authors meant by the data.
So that just comes with practice. So since one of the few benefits that come along with being as old as I am is that I have had, you know, 10, 12 years of access to data and studies, and I've 10 years of experience looking into them, there's a kind of a rhythm you get into when you're going into a study. You read the abstract, you read the methods, you read the results, and almost in that order. The introduction is just usually flavor stuff that you read later to make it make more sense. And then it seems like a trick, but it's something that I don't see enough people do when they're going over studies. Just look at the discussion section. They're going to summarize. They're going to summarize everything they found in that last part of the study, and so you can seem a lot smarter than you actually are, at least in my case, because you're just all you have to do is rephrase. If you understand something, just rephrase it in your own words and give it back in your own voice. And when it makes you, you get to take credit for all the work that they did because you get to sound smart, even though you're just reading. And it turns it into your voice. So it's something that people might actually want to hear because scientific language is really, really boring.
Right.
So what, you've been on YouTube for a little while now. What made you originally want to start a YouTube channel?
So my channel was originally supposed to be a gaming channel. Because at the time I used to watch like a lot of gaming YouTubers, some of which I still do. There's this one dude named Koopa X. He's actually really funny, and he's from the South too. So he has like a Southern accent, which makes the gameplays even funnier. There's another dude, Chris Move. He mostly plays NBA 2K, and I never thought I'd like watching someone play like a basketball video game, but it's actually entertaining. Corey X Kenshin is another one. I still watch him to this day. Really funny. Also, one of the most humble gaming YouTubers I've seen. Like, he doesn't really seem to I guess brag about the things that he has. He's more so humble for his following and like what he's doing on the platform. So he's really a person I would consider like a great gaming YouTuber to watch, just in terms of commentary and in terms of personality.
Yeah. I think you hit a lot of nails on a lot of heads there. It's, you didn't really mention the games they played because they're not very important. It's if they're an engaging, if they're an engaging personality and they're fun to listen to, that's why you tune in. So,
right. Because most people don't like sports video games. And it's like, you know, you have to, I guess, like, when it comes to watching people play games, because, like, people look at this and they're like, oh, how could you sit there for, like, 15 minutes and just watch someone play a video game when you could play it yourself? Well, it's like, some people make it entertaining, you know? But I originally wanted to do gaming videos. And those were the people that inspired me to do that. But then I got sucked down into the political YouTube space.
Man, a gaming YouTuber who got sucked into politics. You just don't hear about that a lot.
So what happened was, like, I think I was watching... I also used to watch Leafy and Pyro Syndical around that time. If you guys know about them, you'll know that they're, like, commentary YouTubers. They basically like to talk smack about other YouTubers and whatnot. And then in my recommendations one time, I got a Feminist Wrecked compilation video. Now, I think I got this. I think I know why I got this now. I was always confused as to why it kept popping up, but I think I do. Because Leafy, I think he did some videos crapping on feminists, him and Pyro Cynical. And then that popped up in my recommended. And at first, I didn't want to watch it because I had no interest. I thought it was annoying that it kept popping up. But, of course, curiosity kills the cat. And
you had to.
I started watching it, and I was hooked. So I kept watching it and watching it and watching it until I got recommended some black guy who I started watching. And I immediately began to agree with him because, one, he sounded a lot like my best friend, in the sense that him and my best friend, they kind of would formulate their opinions the same way. And in terms of personal issues, him and my best friend would almost say the exact same things. It was kind of weird.
It's like, what is he doing in his free time? Have I seen this person before outside of this? Yeah.
But that just drew me in even further. And then eventually I started watching people like No Bullshit, who I surprisingly hate now. And I even had a DM conversation with him.
I remember that.
Chew on Head, Blair White, you know, the usual suspects, until I eventually reached James Alsup, which is surprising because you wouldn't expect a 17, 18-year-old black kid to start listening to a white nationalist. But at the time, I didn't know he was a white nationalist. I thought he was just another anti-SJW personality because some of the videos that he did do were like anti-SJW videos. So he would critique Now This or MTV. You know, he would do these type of videos, but he would do it in a different style, which drew me even more. And, you know, once I found out about him being at Charlottesville and everything, that's when I had to kind of evaluate what I was watching. Like, do I really agree with this person? You know, because he had some pretty, not yikesy takes, but he had some takes that I strongly disagreed with. And that's when I began to back away from him. And then eventually I started following a lot of leftists on Twitter. And I eventually started making a move towards the left. And I started to notice, like, my time in the anti-SJW sphere was kind of short. Like, it was only about, I think, 1 year. That's how long it lasted.
And now, then, I was going to ask when you how old you were when you started to get into No Bullshit and all these guys.
Yeah, that was, I think, around 17 going on 18. And then for most of the time I was 18, well, not even most of the time, but all the time I was 18, I pretty much was a, I guess you could say, a conservative at that point. At that time, I would say, like, if you were to talk to me at that time and ask, hey, where do you stand on the political spectrum? I'll just, like, use a nickname for my real name, where would you stand on the political spectrum? I would probably say, oh, well, you know, I'm a center right person. But no, looking back, I could say that I was honestly a conservative, like, close to, I guess, the MAGA-tards.
Oh, no. Yeah. So if you don't mind me asking, how big is politics in your family, in your friend's circle, like, especially around that time? Like, how much about politics did you hear from outside the internet, from the real people around you?
Around that time, like, even before that time, like, my mom would tell me to watch CNN because she thought it was educational for me. So I remember when I was 13, she wanted me to stop watching, like, a lot of cartoons and sports and stuff. She wanted me to start watching things like the History Channel, which I still watch. I love the History Channel. She wanted me to watch things like the Discovery Channel, you know, CNN, MSNBC. She wanted me to watch all these different things and that had to do with politics. And I did for some time, but afterwards, of course, I stopped because I kind of got bored with it. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, my mom, she's not really that much of a political person. Neither is my sister. But my best friend, who I was just mentioning, like, he was pretty political. So me and him would kind of get into discussions sometimes. And once Trump got elected, that's when everything changed.
I think that's true for a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, my theater teacher was like, you guys need to start getting involved in politics. He was like, even though you guys are, like, 16 or 17 right now, these things are going to affect you in the future. So you need to start having, like, discussions and getting involved. And I guess that's what kind of changed me a little bit. It wasn't that big of a change, but it eventually led me to, I guess, explore politics on YouTube and on the internet and have more discussions with my friends and stuff.
Okay. So have you heard about the YouTube pipeline?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I asked because I was wondering, you kind of went from getting into YouTube and watching YouTube for video games and stuff like that, and then one YouTuber kind of branches out a little bit into reaction videos, because it makes sense, right? Reacting to video games versus reacting to real life stories or things like that. And then that just, there's just a little path that you take that gets you all the way to James Alsup. Yeah. So do you think there's some legitimacy to that?
Yeah, I do. I think that it mostly happens within gaming circles, because that's where most of these ideas tend to fester. So, like, and I think it's mostly because most gamers themselves are apolitical. Like, if you were to really, like, spend time in gaming circles, like, even just, like, talk to a few gamers, like, you wouldn't really expect them to be, like, into politics, because, you know, if you ask them, hey, like, what do you think about this issue? They're like, oh, I don't really care. You know, I just don't really care about that type of stuff. And I think that's what easily leads them down to this, I guess you could say, pipeline when they start to explore that. Even then, like, most gaming circles are edgy and, you know, they're filled with...
Have you heard the joke that in gaming there are two genders, male and political?
You heard that joke? I've never heard of that joke.
Male and political, two sexualities, straight and political, two races, white and political. So I heard that before, and I thought it was I like it. I'm still young enough to like memes. Damn it, I like that one quite a bit because it does seem to be they get into politics not because that they necessarily developed an interest organically, but because something was coming in to their mm-hmm. ironically enough safe space, and this was the thing that they I say they, but and I, to have my BioShock tattoo here, I love me some, I love me some video games. But yeah, it you kind of get used to, there's a certain expectation, a certain default that you expect to encounter in a video game. And if anything goes outside of that default, you kind of think, well, there needs to be a reason for that. You can't just have a female character. You can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and that scene as political, there must be a reason behind it. Maybe some kind of insidious reason that they're going to put that in there. They're trying to push feminazism on you by having a lady shoot all the bad guys.
Or like this does the agenda. Or
yeah,
whatever.
It's the agenda. I always wanted them to know, like, what do they think the end point of that agenda is? like we put more WOMs in video games, and then step two.
And then step and then two, like, we go into, like, interracial relationships.
Oh, no! Hopefully that was not step two. Hopefully the interracial relationship came before step one, right?
I guess step two, I guess it would be, like, jeez, I honestly don't know what step two is.
Don't give away our plan. Don't tell them more than what we need to let them know. Keep them off the trail. So you're still close enough to those gamer roots that you can kind of see where they're coming from, and that's always super useful when talking to people. I don't want to say across the aisle because that sounds dumb. Lame.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm all about being super cool at all times. That's probably apparent. Very cool. Very, very suave person. But yeah, being able to empathize with people who hold those views that you find abhorrent is really useful for formulating arguments. Might sound more combative than I think, but it helps you understand and helps you frame things in a way that they might actually start to listen to. When anybody who's listening to both of you, if you feel like if you sound like you understand them better than they understand you, anybody who is caught in that spot where they're on that pipeline, that might mm-hmm. be the thing that stops them. So do you still keep in contact with some of the people, maybe some of the contacts and friends that you made while you were a conservative?
Yeah. I remember actually kind of got a little scared when this happened because I remember one girl who I was talking to, I'll just call her C. So like me and C, like we used to have like DMs and stuff when I was conservative. We always used to talk about like different things like surrounding Trump, and like we used to shit on the libs a lot.
But, like you do.
But like when I started making that shift going to the left, she commented on one of my posts. It wasn't like a hostile post or anything. I think it was just like a high thing. And I kind of like overthought about it. And I was like, oh shit. What if they find out, like, I'm a lib, like, I am the lib now. Like, what if they find out, like, will they not like me anymore? Like, will they stop talking to me? I mean, we really haven't talked much, and I haven't really seen her much in my feed, even though I think I still follow her. But, yeah, most of my friendships are, like, conservatives who, I guess, had contact with me when I was, like, I guess you could say transitioning from being conservative to going on the left. Most of those friendships have, like, ended in horrible ways.
Yeah, it kind of happens. A lot of... I don't really get on Facebook anymore because most of my family is super right-wing. And I've heard that some people can just, like, read stuff their family posts and, like, just keep scrolling and not comment on it. I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. So, I have to stay off Facebook before I lose the rest of my family. On the other hand, never mind. It's like, unless... No, not yet. Not yet.
So what made you get into politics?
I think you hit the nail on the head earlier. I need to use a different expression. You were very accurate to a pinpoint degree. That's worse. Trump. So I thought I was so cool when I was your age because on my Facebook profile, and this was back when Facebook was pretty fresh, when they had that little section, I don't know if they still have it, where you could describe your politics. I put, Democrats blow, Republicans suck. I was so cool.
No.
Yeah. It's an old Lewis Black joke. I thought I was so cool because, man, I don't choose a side. I play by my own rules. I was, and that coolness continues to this day. The coolness continues to this day, but obviously I've went just so far to the left of what I used to be. Because I was never really conservative, because it's hard to be conservative, even in a conservative area, when you start to think, man, I think I kind of want to rub my face against dude faces, like kind of, like, yeah. So it's hard to stay conservative in that area. I know some people manage to do it, and they make a lot more money than me. But so I was never super conservative, but when Trump,
so are you like more libertarian than
pretty left
or like independent?
Independent, which is a way to say milquetoast centrist, because, you know, if you don't take a side, yeah. South Park School of Politics, hate everything, caring about anything is stupid, until I thought, actually, I kind of want to get married, and especially a lot of conservative gay people and LGBT people that I've talked to, like, we don't need to be political, like, our movement, or our identity doesn't need to be political. It's like, it kind of did, like,
yeah.
I'm married because we got political. So
right, that's the thing. That's the thing that people forget about. And it's like the same thing with, like even the same dynamics with, like I guess you could say black conservatives. It's kind of ironic that some of them say this, but like I remember talking to some, and they're like, "Oh well, black people don't have to choose a side," and I'm like, "Well, you chose one. That's like, weird that you're saying other black people don't."
and then they go on to say that it's bad that they chose the side they did.
Right, even though they're still on that side. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Wouldn't it be great to be one of those, like, be part of a minority group that has historically been oppressed by, well, everybody, but especially conservatives, and to say, oh, actually, don't worry. You're not doing anything wrong. You're right to think. We're just being hysterical. Look at me. I'm one of the reasonable ones.
Yeah,
I'll help you out
a
little bit.
So much. I think I've actually experienced that at some points in my life. I just never thought about it. Because, well, growing up with me, and this is why my name is Oreo, like, basically the concept of, like, oh, you're black on the outside, but you're white on the inside. So, like, a lot of people would say, oh, why do you talk white? Why do you act white? You know, and I never caught on, like, I never got it. Like, oh, yeah, what do they mean? Why do I act white? Like, how does a person act white? But, you know, over time I realized, like, they were basing it off of stereotypes and, like, how stereotypically white people talk. And it's like, oh, well, they tried to attribute that with me, but really I'm just being my own person.
Yeah.
But... like, I remember in high school, like, much later in high school, like, I think junior year, this one lady, she was nice, and I think she was well-meaning. I don't think she noticed, like, you know, and I didn't notice that, you know, this kind of falls into that, oh, you're kind of the good ones, you know?
Yeah.
Because my school, even though it was diverse, there were still, like a lot of black kids that went there. And most of these black kids, they came from, like, the... South side of Chicago, which is basically, to put it in lighter terms, the hood.
Yeah. Very, so, very subtle.
Yeah. So basic, and I come from the hood. So pretty much, you know, I guess she couldn't relate to them as much as she could with me. And I guess she was like, oh, well, you're one of the ones that I can relate to the most. And it's like, and now I look back on it, and I'm like, it's kind of yikesy.
But at the time, did you kind of feel a little bit, yeah, I'm getting acceptance.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Yeah. That's how I felt. I was like, yeah. Like, whenever, like, because when she said that, I was just like, yeah, Yeah, she's kind of right. I am kind of the ones that you could relate with.
But now
that I've kind of like, I guess thought about it more and like just seeing other people talk about their experiences with that, it's like, yeah, I can kind of see why that's kind of shit, man.
It's really tempting to be one of the good ones, especially so if you're part of a minority group, to see like, oh, I'm going to gain so much greater acceptance if I'm one of the good ones. So
right.
when I was finally accepting, yep, I'm gay, 100%, I wasn't going to be one of the sissy gays. I was going to lift weights. I was going to talk with a deep, manly voice. I was going to like sports. Which, one, how fucking homophobic is that of me to think that like gay guys don't do that? Because
right.
I had the same conditioning and imprinting of what a gay person is as everyone else.
And I also have the same like thing with me, like when she said that, and even my mom, like, I'm so shocked about this, because I've been thinking about it more, and it's like the whole intra-racism thing, where it's like racism can exist within minority groups who are oppressed. So like my mom, like whenever we're on the bus or something, and like a black guy gets on, and like, let's say this black guy's sagging, he has on like a hoodie, you know, he kind of has like a serious expression in his face, not mean or angry, but just serious, you know, like they're in deep thought or something.
Resting bitch face.
I'm on my phone on the bus. She's like, oh, put that away. And I'm like, why? Like, he's not going to do anything. I didn't see like him acting suspicious. He just got on the bus, but I put it away anyway, cause I know like she's going to keep telling me to do it. And, you know, it's and also her telling me like, oh, well, you know, don't really listen to rap music that much. And like, oh, always wear a belt, you know, or whatever, so my pants don't sag or whatever. And it's like, damn, it's like, in my opinion, you have to act like the status quo in order to succeed in the world. And that status quo is, well, like a stereotypical white person. Well, what is that? Or like, well, a straight white person. Well, what is that? Well, one, like, if you're a man, then don't get into a relationship with other men. Also, if you're a black man or Hispanic man or Asian man, well, try not to act like the stereotypical version of that. Right? You know, it's really I guess eye-opening to me in a way, because I never like thought about it until recently when I got more exposed to political circles and stuff.
I wonder, so a lot of the rationals will say things like, well, of course you have to dress for the job that you want, and they pride themselves in logic, but I want them to, can you explain to me logically, why is it more acceptable to wear your pants at this height versus this height? What is the logical difference? Why is one better than the other?
I honestly don't know. I know, like, with the whole dressing professional thing for, like, a job interview or whatever, it's like...
But what is professional?
Yeah, you want to put your best foot forward, you know, so you can get the job and whatnot. But it's like, some job interviews, you don't have to wear a suit. And like, in some job interviews, if you do wear a suit to that job interview, I know it's rare, but some cases this does happen. Because I remember when we had to go through like in high school, they were preparing us for like job interviews and stuff. And this one dude was like, yeah, so I was going for this job interview, and like, I had on a suit. He said, I had on my nice shoes. I had on a tie. I was ready. And then he was like, I came to the job interview and they just looked at me funny. He was like, why are you guys... You know, he thought to himself, why are they looking at me like that? And he said, somebody finally said it. They said, you really didn't have to come dressed like this, but okay. I'm like, oh, okay.
I think it's really interesting. Why is a suit considered professional attire? What made that a thing? Like, I wore a suit.
Yeah, I think, isn't it because, like, we as a society, we kind of give meaning to things? So, like, I guess you could say, like, I don't know if this is true or not, but let's just say, hypothetically speaking, like, birds, when they see a door, they're not, oh, yeah, they're just like, oh, what is this thing in front of me? versus humans, we give that meaning. So it's like, oh, that's a door. What does a door do? Oh, a door leads you into another room, or you can open a door, you can close a door, you know, you can shut a door, you know.
And then it gets more abstract than that. It gets more, when you start talking about things like symbols, we can understand symbols. Why is a tie considered more distinguished, upper class? Why does it give you this air more so than just a normal t-shirt?
Than like a necklace or something like that.
Or something like that, yeah. Is it because there's something actual deeply psychological about it? Or is it just because we've just decided, and it's been drilled into your head, that, oh, I associate this with people of high status, but because they, but the high status people wearing that, that came first.
Right, right.
So when people talk about like privilege and things like that, it gets really, it seems pedantic and it seems like you're splitting hairs, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff that if you want to be really successful in most fields, it's hard to deviate too far outside of the default settings of those character sliders. Mm-hmm. You don't want to talk with too much of an accent, because if I came in talking like that, when I talked to my mama, if I came in talking like this to a job interview to be a professor at some kind of like big university, they'd probably think, even if they didn't want to think it, they would probably think like subconsciously that, man, this guy probably don't know what he's talking about. He ain't using the right words. Right. He ain't using good grammar. I don't want them talking to my students like this. But why? You can make the argument that they couldn't understand me, but what if they could? Or why would they just assume that I wasn't as intelligent? So there's a lot of stuff like that that you got to be that default in the character slider.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you get political. Default right. or political. Well, so what is your plan going forward with your Twitter presence, your online presence, your YouTube streaming? What is your plan going forward? Because you're still young, you still got good knees, you still have the world ahead of you. What are you gonna do with your life?
So I guess like with my online presence, I guess I'll still talk about politics, maybe like when I'm 24 or whatever. I guess 4 or 5 years ahead, like I'll still be talking about politics. I'll still be on Twitter, hopefully. I'll hopefully be in a 4-year, most likely working on my master's in sociology, maybe.
All right, man. Master's in sociology. I like it. Master's degrees are fun.
Because I've noticed like with most of my videos, it's mostly like responding to a situation or a video that like some anti-SJW or conservative made. And I guess like I want to start making video about more complex things, or like my ideas surrounding, I guess, concepts, or like even some original ideas of my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I've started to like look into these things, and I'm like, well, maybe I want to talk, but right now I don't think I have the best understanding of it. But you know, I that's why I kind of want to, you know,
just
study more and look into it.
Giving you my sage old man advice, just find something you're interested in and start researching it. Decide you're going to make a video and then let the research come at you. Because now that you have a purpose to go towards, it all comes at you much, much, much quicker. It's more enjoyable to do the research. You keep finding ideas. The hard part is knowing when to stop saying you got enough for a script. That's the hard part for me. And stopping it there. But I think that's a good direction to go. Not just responding to specific videos or specific people, but actually talking more broadly about concepts, because you have a lot to say. There's a perspective there.
We have a lot to say, but we have to figure out how to say it. Because like you could say so much and mean so little.
Well, all right, man. It was really cool talking to you. I'm looking forward to doing this again. I think we are, hopefully for our second podcast, we're going to start doing some interviews, right? So we interviewed each other this time. They know a little bit more about us. We know a little bit more about each other. So that sets up a pretty good stage. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's really cool that you've watched it or listened to it all the way to the end. I think we both appreciate you a ton, right?
Yee.
All right. So tune in next time, and we will have some really cool people on. We'll keep talking, and we'll keep putting our sultry voices right into your ear holes. We'll see you next time on the Debaterios podcast.
Bye.
There we go. Sign off.